know, if they're all popular culture, we must be unpopular culture. You know, to win any election, you need 50 plus one of the total votes. You can have 10 million on one side and 10 million plus one on the other side. The plus one side wins. So it's not surprising the single vote can also frequently affect the outcome of an election. And it happens often enough, surprisingly, every election day, if not at the national level, at least at the local and state level. A lot of you have forgotten that legislation also moves on one vote. How many remember how many votes was the margin when Bill Clinton got his crime bill with the assault weapons ban? Exactly, one. And he had to struggle to get two votes, the one to bring them even and one to give them the majority. So it's not surprising with this concept of just plus one that the Supreme Court decisions are frequently plus one. The Heller decision in 2008, McDonald decision in 2010, they're all of special interest to gun owners, but they were both decided 5-4. Now, throughout history, the Supreme Court has decided all kinds of issues effectively that impact our lives in every possible way, not just gun rights, but other constitutional issues, commercial questions, procedural issues, judicial and criminal cases, and, of course, the broad spectrum of civil rights cases. Many of those decisions have been by one vote. How many of you think that the famous Miranda versus Arizona case was a sweeping Supreme Court decision? It was a 5-4 vote. And it doesn't matter whether it's one vote or a 2 or 3 vote majority. What the Supreme Court decides lasts for centuries. The Dred Scott case I like to use as an example of the Supreme Court getting it wrong and taking 100 years to come back and change it, probably in Brown versus the Board of Education. On a trip to St. Louis years ago, I got to visit the courthouse where the original Scott case was brought, an amazing little courthouse, ancient, beautiful inside. And I was under the impression when I got there that that was the court that got it wrong. But surprisingly, the lower court got it right. It was the Supreme Court that got it wrong, saying that people could own other people. And it took a long time for that to be reversed. Not exactly the same language, but the concepts that were involved. So we are facing a situation where every election for the presidency is important because of the ability of the president to nominate candidates to the Supreme Court. And naturally, like when you're playing baseball in the schoolyard, you pick your friends first. And we have seen the current president already pick 2 people. And both of them have voted against us in the past and will vote against us in the future. The Senate is the one that decides whether the president gets his pick or not. And there have been many fights through the years, Bork and others, that the Senate refused to accept a person. But if the president's party is in control of that Senate, then his picks go through greased. It's done. So we are faced in this election with the idea of not only picking a president who will not start with a planned agenda, but a Congress, and a Senate particularly, that will look at the issue fairly on both sides. Now, the concept of open elections and the importance of the Supreme Court is sort of, you know, pushed out of the media. It's not a big issue. Yes, there are stories occasionally. But you've got 4 of the current 9 people into their 70s. And let me give you the rundown. Ginsburg is 79. Scalia and Kennedy are both 76. And Beyer is 74. Chief Justice Roberts, on the other hand, is 57. Thomas is 64. Alito, 62. And then the two younger ones, Sotomayor, 58. And Kagan, 52. They're elected for life. What a president decides in one period can last well beyond his presidency, even if he does two terms, 4 years or 8 years. But the Supreme Court decisions and the impact of his packing a court one way or the other can last 30 to 40 years. And it has happened in the past. And sometimes the so-called good guy picks go wrong. Earl Warren was supposed to be a conservative. Dave may offer more wisdom about this. There is a certain amount of crapshoot to it, but when you start out with a president like Obama, who has clearly gone out and picked people he knows will match his philosophy with regard to the Constitution in general and the Bill of Rights and Second Amendment in particular, you know what kind of uphill battle you're facing. So whatever your reasons for electing a president may be, the key one is to know that if you want to give him 30, 40 years of power, let him pick the Supreme Court. Thanks.
Thank you. What I'll just follow up on Joe's remarks with some sort of additional details about how things actually work at the Supreme Court level and what a difference activists can make. Because George Bush won the 2004 election, that is the reason why Heller came out the way it did. He didn't have any appointments in Supreme Court appointments in his first term. He had two in his second term. He picked Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Samuel Alito after he first picked Harriet Myers, his White House counsel, and she stepped aside, and then Alito got picked. Well, those were the two picks that made the difference in that 5-4 vote, replacing Justices Rehnquist and O'Connor. If John Kerry had won that election, and if it weren't for the gun issue, John Kerry would have won that election, then President John Kerry would have been picking the Supreme Court justices, and instead of Heller coming out 5-4 the way it did, it would have come out 6-3 in the other direction, with Justice Stevens' dissenting opinion turning into the majority opinion of the court, and we would have had an official ruling from the court that the Second Amendment is only for people in the militia, narrowly defined, not the, if you're actually in the, doing National Guard duty, then you can have a gun, but other than that, there's no meaningful Second Amendment right. As Joe has said, there are a lot of justices who are getting on in the years, and they have a job they like, they may not retire, but age catches up with everyone eventually. And I would also say Justice Thomas is only in his 60s, but doesn't seem to be leading the healthiest lifestyle based on his body mass index, so you can't count on him being around forever either. So it is entirely possible that the next president could end up picking 4 new Supreme Court justices. Now, when presidents pick Supreme Court justices, although the consequences to us, we think of, first of all, their stance on Second Amendment issues, my sense is that in neither case, whether it's a President Romney picking the justices or President Obama picking the justices, the Second Amendment doesn't rise to the level in their picking of intentionality. But what happens is they are picking from, in either case, they're picking from a certain team. You know, if you are a Democrat, whoever the Democratic president is, you know, if President Obama said, you know, I'm got reelected and then retired and said, I'm just sick of this job, I'm just going to move back to Indonesia and enjoy my pension, and Joe Biden took over, or Hillary Clinton, or whoever became the president, and this is likewise true on the Romney side, if he said, you know, I enjoyed running for the job, but I don't want to really do it, so I'm going to quit and let Paul Ryan become president. However that worked out, and My point is, whoever is picking the Supreme Court justices, they have a set of folks they can pick from. If you're a Democratic president, there is a certain list of people who are known as high-quality justices on the state Supreme Courts and on the Federal Circuit Courts of Appeal, and who have a general inclination on your side. And likewise, if you're a Republican picking justices, there's that same set of folks. Now, you can reach out beyond that, but you start with, on both sides, roughly a dozen people who are going to be the core of your potential picks, and maybe you can go beyond that, but you start with those as the core. And it's not true that everybody in that core on the Democratic side is going to be anti-gun, or that everybody on the core on the Republican side is going to be pro-Second Amendment, but on the whole, they will tend to incline in that direction, giving you fairly good odds of how they'll actually act when they're on the Supreme Court. So President Obama didn't pick Sonia Sotomayor to be an associate justice because he said, I want to really get those gun people and I'm going to put an anti-gun justice on the court. He picked Sotomayor for a whole variety of reasons, but because of the team she plays on, she came out on the anti-gun side and actually joined Justice Breyer's opinion in McDonald versus Chicago, urging that Heller be overturned, a rather extreme approach. It's been true in the recent past that Democratic presidents picking Supreme Court justices tend to get closer to what they want than Republican presidents do, and that's partly because the Democratic presidents, you have Barack Obama was a lecturer at the University of Chicago Law School. Bill Clinton actually taught law at the University of Arkansas way back in the olden days. He was a graduate of Yale Law School. So it's something that they understand and have a lot of personal training with. Both of them went to law school for 3 years when they spent a lot of time reading Supreme Court cases. And then on the other side, you have this, say, George H.W. Bush picking justices. He didn't go to law school. He was relying on the advice of various folks, and he picked one justice, Clarence Thomas, who basically fulfilled what a Republican president would seem to want in picking justices, and another one, David Souter, who pretty quickly got captured by the Georgetown intelligentsia, and had a different point of view. And that's partly because of Bush's lack of care in picking justices. And I think that will, Mitt Romney is a very intelligent guy, but probably less focused on law issues per se. But the odds are you get better justices from a Second Amendment point of view with a Romney presidency than you do with a second Obama term. And what can go wrong with a Obama dominated court? We could by 2016 have a court with six Obama appointees on it. You could have Heller directly overturned, and that's, of course, the sort of the worst case scenario, and very possible too. But the other thing is that Supreme Court opinions are always part of this continuing dialogue. Think of them as like being a novel where you're always writing new chapters, and who writes the chapters changes over time. So what the meaning of chapter 4 was partly depends on what people write in chapter 47 as the next chapter. And so you can describe chapter 4 in one way, or you can describe it in another. And it is very possible that a Obama-dominated Supreme Court could in the future not formally overrule Heller, but construe Heller in its narrowest possible terms and say, yes, there is, and that would, I think, be wise for a court in the sense that it wanted to restrict the Second Amendment as much as possible, but not to expend all of its political capital doing that. They would simply say, what Heller means is there is a right to have a handgun in the home for self-protection. And that's all it means. It's not about a right to carry in general, even though Heller does actually talk about a general right to carry. But what the case of 2008 or 2010 means can always change based on what the court in 2016 or 2020 says that it means. So there's a very real possibility of Heller being limited to solely being in the home, or limited in other ways, to say that very oppressive licensing laws where you have to pay $500 to get a permit, that those are okay. Or even in a nightmare scenario that the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act enacted 2005, which protects the firearms manufacturers from being sued out of business under the theory that gun companies are responsible for the crimes committed by criminals with guns, a future court could rule that unconstitutional and revive all those lawsuits. And so you could have a Second Amendment right to arms, except there wouldn't be any gun companies around to make the guns because they'd all be bankrupt. The positive scenario for what could happen in the future is that this 5-4 majority on the Second Amendment we've seen in Heller and McDonald can grow. And that is important because it's, as Joe said, it's whoever has the five wins the Supreme Court case. But whether that Supreme Court opinion becomes enduring, durable, and influential, and how strong that precedent is, often depends on the size of that Supreme Court majority. So if you have a decision that is an 8-1 or a 9-0, that has a better chance, as legal historians have shown, of influence of staying the dominant line in the long run. And that's one of the reasons that Chief Justice Roberts, as a judicial craftsman, often writes narrower opinions to try to get 8 or 9 votes rather than something broader where he might get 5 or 6, as he knows that in the long run, getting that supermajority on a particular case improves the chance that that case will stay as the controlling rule of law, not just 2 years from now when you've got the same people on the court, but 25 years from now or 100 years from now. And this is the question that we face with Heller and McDonald. If they stay as 5-4s, then they become always on that precipice, that danger zone of falling off and potentially being overruled. But with different appointments, they can grow into 7-2s, where the Second Amendment becomes a consensus and accepted part of the Constitution, the way the First Amendment is now. So everything, I'm not sure if 2012 is the most important election in American history, but it's certainly a gigantic one for the future of the Second Amendment, especially at the Supreme Court level. Thank you.
I get to get the last word based on the fact that we, Al and I, sort of control the hall. But I want to remind you that President Obama picked his Solicitor General, Elena Kagan, to be on the Supreme Court. If he's reelected, I suspect he has to do something with Eric Holder, and probably the best place he can do is put him on the Supreme Court. Think about it.
Going to run into a wall at 105 miles an hour, because that would be cool to do. After Eric Holder's first term as president, as Attorney General, if he nominates Holder, he would be making a serious mistake, and I don't think Holder would be confirmed. And boy, people in Washington would have a lot of fun in fighting him. There's a lot of things that can go wrong in the world, but I'm not worried about a nomination of Eric Holder. Thank God.